This is the Future of HR podcast, episode 113.
We'll go back to this idea of working for a great company, where you might grow up, what you might learn. I could not work for a company. I'll just tell you personally, I could not work for a company that allowed high-performing jerks to exist or didn't have a high expectation for people leaders. So you can call us whatever you want. We think it's a privilege to be a people leader. We have high expectations for people leadership. And it really is that. So you can be the best performing sales leader, operations leader, R&D leader. But if you are unable or unwilling to lead at the people leader expectation that we have, you will not have a future here. And I think I go back to, sometimes it's very simple. And I think of this sometimes, JP, where I think of, you know, what kind of company do you want to work for? So you start making that list. Why would you tolerate anything less than that? Now, I also would tell you, I'm a huge believer that doing this work around culture and talent drives incredible performance. If I have a more engaged workforce, if I have high levels of capability around people leadership, I have an absolute opportunity to outperform my peers.
How do you make your company a great place to work year after year? Why is investing in and developing people leaders essential to building a great culture? Hi, I'm your host, JP Elliott, and this is the Future of HR podcast, the only podcast whose mission is to inspire the next generation of HR leaders. On each episode, I interview successful HR executives and thought leaders who are reimagining, rethinking, and leading our field into the future. During our candid conversations, you will learn about their career journeys, their lessons learned along the way, and their insights on how to take our field, and most importantly, your career, to the next level. If you are a fan of the Future of HR podcast, then you know that I'm a big fan of Deeper Signals. Deeper Signals is a modern scientific assessments platform that is revolutionizing the way organizations measure, manage, and develop their talent. And in the age of AI, soft skills are becoming more and more crucial. And that's why their latest innovation to the Deeper Signals platform, Skills Selector, is a game changer that we've all been waiting for in soft skills-based hiring. Here's why I'm impressed with Skills Selector. Number one, it's lightning fast. You get to assess a candidate's soft skills in just 10 minutes. It's fully customizable. You can create customized job profiles that perfectly match your company's needs and your competency frameworks. It's visually intuitive. You can compare candidates side by side instantly. And it doesn't just stop at hiring. It seamlessly transitions into personalized onboarding and development plans so your new hires can hit the ground running from day one. And the best part, it's all backed by science and cutting-edge data analytics. But don't take my word for it. Go to deepersignals.com/futurepod. That's deepersignals.com/futurepod. And try their core drivers assessment for free. It'll give you a sneak peek of the insights you'll gain with the skill selector, and they're going to give you a 14-day free trial to the entire Deeper Signals platform. Don't miss this chance to transform your hiring process. Go to deepersignals.com/futurepod today and see how skill selector can make your hiring smarter, faster, and more effective. Hey everyone, it's hard to believe, but last week we wrapped up Elevate by Future of HR 2024. It was an amazing 3 weeks, and we had 17 interactive sessions from 21 of the top minds in our field. Over 100 plus next-gen HR leaders participated in Elevate, and they had the opportunity to expand their know-how and accelerate their skills in organizational design, strategic thinking, coaching, assessing potential, and what it takes to be a world-class CHRO. For those of you who participate in Elevate, I want to thank you for making it an amazing experience and for helping to build our Future of HR community. And of course, I need to thank all the world-class speakers who taught us so much. I'm very grateful for you being a part of Elevate. Now, if you're upset that you missed Elevate 2024, do not worry. Elevate by Future of HR is coming back in the spring of 2025, and it'll be even better and more impactful. I can't say too much now, but I have big plans for Elevate in 2025. And if you're really serious about becoming a more business-focused and strategic HR leader, then you need to make attending My Next Gen HR Accelerator program, part of your 2025 development plan. Next Gen HR Accelerator is the best leadership development program for HR directors and managers because it will build your business acumen and financial acumen. It will sharpen your strategic thinking skills and elevate your executive influence and communication skills. And it will teach you how to translate business strategy to HR initiatives that deliver impact and value. You also get a 360 feedback, personal coaching from me, and you leave with a from to development plan to help take your impact to the next level. Our next cohort starts on January 21st, and you can register between now and December 20th. Space is limited, and we do expect to sell out. So go to nextgenhracelerator.com or futureofhr.com or reach out to me directly to learn more. I'd love to have you in the program. And with that, I want to introduce this week's guest, Tim Richmond. Tim is the Executive Vice President, Chief Human Resources Officer for AbbVie, and he's responsible for leading a global human resources organization focused on engaging high-performing employees and amplifying a culture that drives business results. As a result of this focus, AbbVie has been named to more than 40 Great Place to Work and Top Employer lists and is prominently recognized on the Best of lists related to workplace, diversity, employee engagement, corporate responsibility, and business performance. Prior to AbbVie, Tim held various HR leadership roles at Abbott and the 3M Company. Tim is also the chair of the board of directors for the Human Resources Policy Association, which is the leading public policy organization of chief human resources officers representing the largest employers doing business in the United States and globally. He's also on the board of the University of South Carolina Center for Executive Succession. And in 2024, he was awarded the Distinguished HR Executive Award by the HR Division of the Academy of Management and was named a Fellow of the National Academy of Human Resources in 2020. What became clear to me in my time with him is that he has a deep passion and drive for setting high standards when it comes to AbbVie's talent and culture. I think you're really going to learn a lot from Tim as we discussed why creating a strong organizational culture starts with the goal of being known as a great place to work, how AbbVie's innovative Ways We Work framework equally weights and rewards both performance and behavioral metrics, his advice to HR leaders on how to build trust and credibility with the business leaders they support, the central role and importance of people leadership in driving business outcomes, and why he believes the future of HR demands equal focus on strategy, leadership development, and talent management, and much more. I'd love to hear your thoughts in this episode as you listen, so drop me a line or tag me on LinkedIn and say hello. And now let's jump into my conversation with Tim. Tim, welcome to the Future of HR podcast. How are you?
I'm doing great, JP. Great to be with you today. Excited for our topics. Hope things are good in your world as well.
I appreciate that. Yeah, I'm doing well, but I am super excited to have you in the podcast. You've been on my wish list for a while. Obviously, Angela Lane and I are friends, and you are at AbbVie. And so she kept saying, when are you bringing Tim on? And I was like, well, you got to talk to Tim for me and make this happen. And so I'm glad she helped us facilitate that.
Me too.
Now, and we often hear people say they grew up at a company. And for you, that company was 3M. And you were there for almost 15 years, but held a variety of HR roles, including multiple plant HR assignments, a foreign service assignment as an HR manager in the Middle East and Dubai and others. Tell us more about what it was like to grow up at 3M and how that shaped you as an HR leader and professional.
Yeah, it was such a fortunate experience for me to start at 3M. And one thing I've learned over time, I really like working in a global business environment. 3M also very diversified. And so one of the benefits of working in that company is you can work in electronics or consumer, industrial, safety, healthcare. My first healthcare experiences were at 3M. That was such a great experience for me. I got to see different business models. I got to experience different life cycle elements of working across different businesses. And 3M also was great because they believed in giving people opportunity without kind of traditional paradigms. And so what I mean by that is almost 15 years, I had 11 different jobs. And JP, you would never design that for someone, right? You'd never say, oh, that'd be a great plan for anybody. It's not a great plan for everybody or anybody. It just was my experience. And what that really reinforced in me is if you get a chance, what's the dream? The dream is to join a great company who's going to give you an opportunity to learn, to grow, and to make an impact. And 3M was that type of company for me. A lot of times I'll give people advice and I'll say, you know, get us started at a great company, a company that has like a talent engine, a talent management philosophy. 3M was that, again, that company for me. I moved 6 times, including the international experience that you mentioned, really changed my life. It helped me grow as a person and as a professional. So I'll always be grateful to my time at 3M.
Well, 3M is a terrific company. And I know most of us think about 3M and Post-it notes because that story is so iconic. But it really covers the gamut in so many different areas. But I do want to go back, Tim. I love your advice on pick a great company that has a talent philosophy, that has room to grow, that probably has mature people leaders that know how to invest in talent. I think that's great advice. But you said you had 11 jobs in 15 years, and that maybe wasn't the best. Why was that a great work for you? But why is that maybe not the career path you'd pick for somebody, 11 jobs in 15 years?
It's got to be good for both the company and the individual, and I suppose the business that you're being assigned to. So sometimes you'd say it's not always best to move to a new job, literally physically relocate, and then 6 months later physically relocate again. It can put a toll on you personally, but also on the business because you have too much cycle time and flow, or not enough cycle time and too much flow. So I think you want to find that balance. And that's always a key word I found. And you think about managing careers, you think about that balance of what's good for the company, what's good for the individual. All I know for me is this is a mentality, JP, that I picked up and I apply today. And I challenge my staff today to live, which is if you took every professional and you said every role you're going to have is a 2 to 3 year assignment, I want you through multiple cycles and I want you to be able to finish the task. If you did that for all, you would never create a CEO. You would never create a CHRO, probably. You would take too much time. So if anything, perhaps, I don't want to give myself too much credit, but perhaps they said, well, we're willing to bet on this individual and their potential to keep growing and going versus a more traditional approach. Because you can't have the same talent paradigm for everybody. You can't have the same career cadence and path for everyone. Or you just won't create that senior level, that executive level talent. So in the end, I wouldn't recommend 11 jobs in 14 and a half years. I know I benefited from that. I have no regrets. That's one of the benefits of being at this point in my career. I look back, every job I had was a beneficial role. I learned from it. I grew in my capabilities. And I'll also say for all those jobs, sometimes good, sometimes not so good. The people leaders, sometimes good, sometimes maybe not my preference. I benefited from all of it. It makes me a better person and a better CHRO today.
Yeah, to your point, you had a lot of opportunity to become agile, learn a lot from those experiences. It sounds like you had that kind of learning mindset throughout. And you're right, you probably wouldn't know create a CEO by just trying to have these sort of academic ways of growth. But a lot of times people have this investment where someone takes a chance on you early in your career and gives you a job that you shouldn't be in at an age you probably shouldn't be there. And that is what helps someone really get to that next level and grow. So
it is interesting you say that because it's so true. It's my bad joke, but I was underqualified for every role I took on. And again, I give 3M credit there because it wasn't like you're the perfect candidate for this role or you meet all the qualifications we're looking for. So sometimes either that bet on talent, perhaps a bet on potential, it's somewhere in the mix. And I think the best companies spend all that time in the talent space, which you mentioned, how we think about this mix of talent that we manage. And you just can't manage them all the same. And you can't manage them too slowly. And with so much, I need to answer all the questions about that individual before I might move them to the next role. It's not a way to do it and create growth. And to the point you made too, you're not going to have a good learning environment. You're not going to be agile around your talent. My guess is you'll be slow, reserved, conservative. And I don't think that's the winning formula.
No, and I think you're really talking about differentiation. And I think different talent gets a differentiated approach based on their capability, based on the potential you see, based on the performance. And I think that is the right way to think about talent, right? And I think talent wants that too. They want to be treated as individuals, not as a cog in the machine. You've got to wait 2 years because that's what happens to your promotions. That's when people leave and get frustrated when they think they're ready. So I think that's a great approach.
Completely agree.
After 3M, you went to Abbott Laboratories, and after 6 years, we held lots of different HR leadership roles. They actually announced, Abbott announced it was spinning off its pharmaceutical business to create AbbVie, which is kind of amazing. And you were asked to be the CHRO, another big opportunity for you. And along with the new executive team, had to stand up AbbVie as a new company, which most CHROs haven't had that experience. It's pretty unique. Tell us what it was like to stand up a new company and think about a new HR function and new values and culture and just everything that goes along with that.
It was a remarkable opportunity for sure. The decision to go to Abbott first, just to give that context, I felt like I was at that career point where I had to make a decision. Was I going to stay at 3M for the long term, or was I going to seek some other opportunity to show a level of breadth, to show a level of capability outside a certain paradigm or certain company, if you will? And so going to Abbott was a great move in that way. Again, another great company, diversified, global, so you can get the theme there that I enjoy, but also fully healthcare. And I learned at 3M that I really enjoyed healthcare. And I enjoyed the mission, the purpose. I enjoyed the people we attracted, motivated, and retained to be a part of that. There's something mission-centric and purpose-driven about working in a healthcare company that I'll never want to work outside of. And I was really fortunate to be named the head of HR for AbbVie. And I can think back at that time, I had the benefit of knowing it was coming. I had the benefit of knowing what my role would be. And I just started making a huge list, of the things that we had the context of being the pharmaceutical business within Abbott to spin to a new co. And what's the from and what's the to? There was a big emphasis on culture. Our CEO, Rick Gonzalez, prioritized culture as a business priority. And not many people do that. It was the great benefit of the whole experience. A, Rick Gonzalez, as our chairman and CEO, who just retired, by the way, as CEO, 11 and a half years in, what a remarkable run for him and for me to be able to work for him during that time. But he prioritized culture as a business strategy. So that gave us this platform for the dream of what do you want AbbVie to be? We knew we'd be an independent company. We knew the date we were going to spin. There was enormous uncertainty. And when you have enormous uncertainty, you have to embrace it. You have to say, there's certain things we control. There's certain things we don't control. Let's focus on the controllable variables. I think deep down, my old Six Sigma experience at 3M really helped me in some ways, which is controllable versus uncontrollable variables, a focus on outcomes and outputs. It really shaped my thinking. But the big dream for me was to create a culture at AbbVie, not only would be unique, but would help us drive performance. It would help us attract, again, motivate and retain the best talent. So then the narrative, and you mentioned Angela Lane, who joined me right after the separation. I couldn't even believe we could attract Angela Lane to our company, but we did. And it's just her and I together on this vision around talent and culture has been so fun, which you don't know. I can say it now looking back as we get close to finishing our 12th year as a company. What you don't know is, are you going to have the time? Because there's a variable of time as you create cultures, as you try and set standards for people leadership, as you look at building reputation. There's all kinds of variables in there. I mean, people did not know who we were. Part of it's you have to create a new name. All these companies that spin or get IPO, they all have funky names because you have to create something you can trademark around the world and use. And so who's AbbVie? And those first few years were really spent on just getting to be known as a company. But there's really an important element, JP, to think about. And that is, that was never our dream, to be known as a company. The dream was to be known as a great place to work, to be known as a premier company. That's the fun part for me, is to reflect on all that years later. Now I could tell you all these proof points, all the recognitions we've received, all the positive feedback we have from our employees. But like I said, externally, being named to all these best company and great place to work lists, that validates the work. It validates the strategy. And a lot of it comes back to culture. Our priority around culture was built on something we call the ways we work. I think in every company, probably, JP, you talk to all these other CHROs and all these other people in the HR field, companies have cultures. Now, the best ones have clarity about what their expectations are for culture, like what's the standard. I know other companies don't have that, and I can't imagine how they would operate in that environment. So I would just say, go back to this idea of working for a great company. I also want to work for a company that's really clear on expectations around whether it's culture, values, behaviors, whatever it is. And you also want to be something more. Our story is built on something more than the words on the wall. A lot of companies, you walk in the front lobby, the words are on the wall. It's the only place you see them. They're never talked about. They're never reinforced. I took some things, and I think this is what I would say to everyone who's having a chance to listen to this podcast. Take these experiences you have and say, what did good look like? How does it get well executed? And so I want to use an example of making behaviors equal to performance. while we're on a podcast, and people won't be able to see this visually, we created a standard around a high performance orientation, but also a high people leader expectation. We equally assess people on their ability to behave against the ways we work. We develop on the ways we work in everything we do. And very importantly, we reward people on the ways we work. So equally reward performance and behaviors. And not many companies do that. I know some people think, God, sounds like a lot of work, and it's not. This is about a strategy around culture that's hardwired, and this is also critical, hardwired into every single HR program, HR process. You cannot avoid it at our company. It's not just the words on the wall. And if I had to walk down the hall and talk to any AbbVie employee, or I was out in the street and met someone who worked for AbbVie, and I talked about the ways we work, I expect them to know all five of those ways we work. Part of it's just the expectation. The other part is you're actually paid based on that. So you should know them. You're assessed on, everyone gets feedback at least once a year on their ability to manage the ways we work. What we wanted to create is a standard of people leadership and create layers of leadership built to that standard over time. And now, 11 plus, almost 12 years later, we can say we're well along on that journey. We feel confident in that standard. We think, and our employees validate this, that it's felt around the world. If you're at a manufacturing site, you're an affiliate, the ways you work matters, people leadership matters. And really what it comes down to, if you really want to simplify it for HR people, you're elevating people leader expectations and you're taking out, and this is really important, you're taking out those high performers who do not demonstrate your culture and your behaviors. We have mechanisms to correct that. We have mechanisms to identify that. And really importantly, for those people, we want them to elevate to the standard or they can go work somewhere else. So people leadership is critical at our company, and so is culture.
Hey everyone, after a quick break, we'll be right back to our conversation with Tim. I'm excited to let you know that I've recently put together a succession planning playbook that you can download for free at futureofhr.com. And whether you want to assess your current approach to succession planning or you're building your leadership development strategy from scratch, this playbook offers an actionable framework designed to help you understand what great succession planning looks like. So go to futureofhr.com and download the succession planning playbook today. So much to unpack there, Tim. But what I like about this story, and I think about when you guys spun out from Abbott, you were intentional about creating a great place to work. Culture was on the priority list, which isn't, as you said, there were some things you can control, some things you couldn't, and success was not guaranteed. You're a new spinoff. Maybe you're going to be successful, maybe you're not. Pharmaceuticals is a challenging business, right? Yet, because the culture was a strategic priority and you had that continuity of leadership and the commitment to that, you were able to really make the culture something that is not just on the wall, but really became the ways we work, how we reward, how we do things here. And I think that's so critical. The second thing we should underline for everyone is, and Mark Efron just came out with this manager accountability survey. We don't hold our managers accountable for doing the things that people managers should do: develop their people, give feedback, lead appropriately, handle a talent review, you know, whatever that is. We give a lot of people leaders a lot of latitude to not do that stuff because it's HR or administrative. And I think it sounds like you guys are looking at that and saying, hey, this is actually how we run the business. So it's what you do and how you do it matters at AbbVie. And you have standards around that, which I think is part of why you've been so successful.
I think so too. And just to give a shout out to Mark, it'll show how like closely linked we are on certain things. Mark and his team came in and we created, in addition to the ways we work, which was, again, that description of our expectations for ourselves together around behaviors and culture, but we also created with our senior team a talent philosophy. Mark helped lead us through that and lead the senior team through that. We knew what we wanted to create, by the way, a little stakeholder management, a little change management 101 for all the listeners of this podcast. Get your businesses to think that they actually helped create it, and they'll be more bought in and more sticky on what it is. We were going to do it anyway, but we got Mark in and it really helped. And I'll always be grateful to Mark for that. But you mentioned something earlier too, JP, this idea of differentiation. We went through this exercise where differentiation is one of the five parts of our talent philosophy, but so are behaviors being able to perform it. So we had these different components of our talent philosophy that paired with that ways we work really was the secret sauce. So clarity around culture, hardwired in everything we do, But then a really understood and stakeholder engaged talent philosophy was critically important for us. And then we just ran hard. We ran hard. And I like how you mentioned in some companies, and it must be awful, go back to this idea of working for a great company where you might grow up, what you might learn. I could not work for a company. I'll just tell you personally, I could not work for a company that allowed high performing jerks to exist or didn't have a high expectation for people leaders. So you can call us whatever you want. We think it's a privilege to be a people leader. We have high expectations for people leadership. And it really is that. So you can be the best performing sales leader, operations leader, R&D leader. But if you are unable or unwilling to lead at the people leader expectation that we have, you will not have a future here. And I think I go back to, sometimes it's very simple. And I think of this sometimes, JP, where I think of, you know, what kind of company do you want to work for? So you start making that list. Why would you tolerate anything less than that? Now, some companies, whether it's the CEO or the management team, they're not interested. I would try and find a way to get them very interested. I also would tell you, I'm a huge believer that doing this work around culture and talent drives incredible performance. If I have a more engaged workforce, if I have high levels of capability around people leadership, I have an absolute opportunity to outperform my peers. So I'm always intrigued by those that don't. I'm glad we do. But I think that's what differentiates the average companies from the really good companies. And you must see a decent amount of that too. You can look back to the rigor, the clarity, the vision, the purpose of anyone's work around talent or culture. To me, it's the differentiating factors.
Yeah, it's easy to say. It's hard to do.
Yeah.
A lot of lip service to culture, values, leadership. But at the end of the day, what do you do when you have to make a financial investment? What do you do when you are having tough times? Do you resort to different behaviors? Does the culture fall away? And so I think that's when you start to see your cultures really stick.
Yeah.
Is when you've got those kind of crucible moments where you've got to make tough decisions. And that, to your point, and I'm glad you brought this up. I mean, every organization has to decide if someone's a high performer, what level of bad behavior does that allow them to have?
That's right.
Some organizations, they may say, well, oh, they're really good. We're going to put up with a lot of bad behavior. Other organizations say that's not going to work for us here. You know, we have to have both. So it's easier said than done. But I think AbbVie has built an amazing place to work and well known for the culture, as well as great business results. So I think you've proven that take care of your people, build a great culture, you'll get the right talent, which helps fill the business.
And that was one of our advantages too, JP, where we were just a new company. So everything was up for grabs. It also creates great risk because everything was up for grabs, right? There's a push and a pull there. So I think that, go back to that long list of things that I thought were priorities. Some of them were in the end. Others were just things that you just think, okay, that's nice, but that's not going to drive that performance or culture. But opportunity, sometimes you'd say, I don't know if it was Rahm Emanuel gets a lot of credit for saying this about like, don't let a crisis go to waste. But I think there are others who have had other ways of saying that. For us, becoming a new company, looking around and saying, hey, it's just us and we've got to perform on behalf of our patients that we serve, the employees that we lead on behalf of, our investors, that creates a lot of focus on what does it take? So that was, again, an opportunity we didn't want to waste and we didn't. That's why, again, it's gratifying to look back on it now. But if you think back, if I really go back to those days, you walked in every day with a lot of uncertainty. And all I know is we ran hard and ran fast.
And I'm sure there's some disagreements along the way. It wasn't all
for sure.
Rainbows and cupcakes with your senior team on every decision you wanted to make around culture. I'm sure there were some rigorous conversations and debate that takes place. It always looks good at the end when there's success, but people don't realize the hours and hours of effort and time that was put in to get there. Tim, I'm curious, though, you created this culture from scratch. If you're a CHRO coming into a new organization or trying to make a culture shift, where would you start? How do you get the senior team to be brought along? Because I think a lot of the biggest challenge we have as HR leaders at times is finding business leaders that appreciate or have a similar point of view to how we think about culture and talent. And influencing those leaders is really the job. That is what you need to be able to do to get the culture to where you want it to be.
For sure. So you mentioned it. I think you have to start with that CEO or that business leader. You and that person have to be 100% aligned in the end. You may not start there, but you've got to get to the closest level you can to be 100% aligned. And I always remember, and I tell this story to others too, when I met with Rick Gonzalez for the first time, I knew what job I was going to have. He was going to be the CEO, chairman and CEO of AbbVie. And he and I didn't know each other that well. He was a long-term Abbott executive. I had just been there for maybe 4 years at that time, by the time we're having this conversation. And he could tell we were kind of feeling it out a little bit about, you know, what do you think, philosophy, style, approach. And all I said to him is, we're going to work on this and we'll get to a point where we're really aligned. But I want you to remember two things. I have two goals every day, and don't ever doubt what I'm doing, how I'm doing it, what I say, what I don't say, that the two things are this. One is, I want this company to be successful. And two is, I want you to be successful. So don't ever doubt number one and number two. And that like set the tone for everything. So I think a lot of times for HR, we don't often say to those that we serve, I'm here to help drive performance. I'm actually here to help create success for you. And if I'm clear about that, people love that, by the way. That's been something I've done forever. There's no business leader I've ever worked for who was upset when I told them, I want to help create success for you in this role. But I think you have to have clarity then on how you can best do that. And if I say culture, talent, whatever it might be, and that's going to be the big driver, I want them to know what the expectations are. I want to have a clear strategy. And I still think there's lots of HR people that don't have a strategy. It's awful to say, but I think it's true. Like you go in and start doing the job, start managing the work. We can lean back on, by the way, lots of policy, lots of procedure. Hey, it's time to do year-end performance. Hey, it's time to do talent reviews. We can lean on those things. Now, we have to be good at all those things, but that's not where we lean. We lean on performance. We have a strategy around what helps us win. We have clear expectations, by the way, about how we best do that. So I go back to the ways we work, and again, not words on the wall, and embedding it into literally, even when we're assessing you as a potential new hire, we're using the ways we work and we're assessing you against that. I just think it's the way to do it. I think getting aligned with that senior leader, having a clear strategy, and then having a plan to execute. And I like to simplify, as you can tell, JP, but I think that's the way to do it.
Yeah, I think it's actually a great roadmap. And I love what you said to your CEO around that. Just like, hey, I'm here to make the business successful and you successful. We've had other CHROs who talk about having no agenda and kind of the same thing. Like, hey, we're here to help you win. And I think that's what separates HR. You know, we don't want to be typically in the front leading the pack, even though we could. We love to support from behind. And our success is, you know, the business success, the leader's success. And it's interesting because not every leader always understands that that's truly how we're operating because they're not wired that way. So they're like, wait, why? You know, and so some people think HR has an agenda. We're like, no, we truly don't have an agenda. We want to make you make better decisions. We want you to think differently. We want to push you and we want to bring our expertise to bear on the talent capabilities and culture piece you're talking about, which is great, Tim.
You said something just now. I know you want to switch, but I love what you just said too. I think this is really important for HR professionals, what you just said, which is helping others make good decisions. I talk about that all the time. If you think about that just enough, like that part of our job is to help other people make good decisions, whether it's around, again, people largely. But I just think it's a huge part of the job. Goes back to number one and number two that I talked about. But I like how you said that. I hope the listeners will capture that. If you think of part of your job is to help other people make good decisions, what would that look like? And you might find yourself behaving differently, coaching differently, advising differently if you do that.
Let's pull the string a little further because I'm glad you recognize that. I think it's really important. It's something we talk about in the Next Gen HR Accelerator. But more importantly, you have to make it visible to the leader that that's what you're doing. Otherwise, they think you are intruding, you're trying to control them. You need to say, hey, part of my worldview as an HR leader is I make you better by helping you make better decisions and being a thought leader, partner, sounding board. So when I'm asking you questions or challenging you, it's because I want to challenge your thinking so you get something better than you would have had without me here. And I think if you don't say that to some leaders, and I've made the mistake of not saying that, and they misinterpret it as, hey, JP's trying to be smarter in the room or catch me in a gotcha moment. I'm like, and I realize later in my career, you have to say that, hey, this is the intent and here's why. And you have to read the room. Maybe they don't want to have questions that moment, but you can really help somebody. And most business leaders are actually really happy when maybe you have a meeting, you go home at night, you think about a few things, you send them an email in the morning and say, hey, I had a couple of things you should think about from yesterday's conversation. Rarely does a business leader say that wasn't helpful. So I'm sure you've had that experience, Tim.
For sure.
How you coach senior leaders and ask great questions?
I'm an observer. I'm an observer of people and teams, and many HR professionals are. And so I like that view. I would like to have whatever I'm going to say informed by what I observe. You know, I've seen us struggle on an issue. I've seen us be challenged in an area, or I've seen us inspire and motivate. So I think I always try and contextualize any coaching or feedback in that context of, I like how you thought of that, which is, how did it go yesterday? What did you think worked best? And I know you wanted to motivate people on a certain topic. Do you think they have clarity in what that is? Like, I just think it's a ask questions, again, in the service of, I want you to be successful. I'm trying to create good outcomes here. So I've always been that type. I'd often not felt a need to be the loudest voice in the room. We have an important role to play. And I think you want to be balanced across the enterprise. I think you want to be that trusted advisor. I'd almost rather in the moment be that trusted advisor before the meeting and after the meeting with the business leader or CEO. Before the meeting even starts, they've brought me in. We're just talking. I'm thinking about, and I can reflect on many examples of being in this role where the CEO calls me down and says, I'm thinking about X, Y, or Z, or I'm concerned about a topic. And we batted around. And again, remember, he knows number one and number two. So we're just trying to think about ways to shape that. We go in and we address it. We try and work on it in front of a whole audience or in front of the executive team. But it's like, I love that role. I would rather have that. I don't want to come in cold to a room and then have an engagement and I haven't been engaged before or after. It's a nice little test, by the way, for HR professionals. Like, are you brought in before? Are you that trusted advisor? Are you brought in after? What'd you think? How did it go? Was I too tough? Those are the most rewarding experiences I've had. I shouldn't say most, but one of the most rewarding experiences I've had is when our CEO has done that. It makes me feel valued. I know he does value my input and he knows what, again, number one and number two are.
Absolutely. And we can have so much more impact as HR leaders when we're brought in early. The worst is when the decision's made and now we are looking like a pair of hands to go execute. And it's sort of too late. And then we start to raise other points of view. It's like now we're being objectives. We're not trying to help. And so I've been in this situation. It's very tough. But you've got to build the trust up front, to your point. And that can take some time. And I know it's challenging for HR leaders. Not every HR leader's got an enlightened CHR or CEO who understands what you're trying to accomplish or understands how you're thinking about things.
But I think you're also right, JP. Like, it's not always just given to you. I can reflect on my own journey with Rick or my own journey in other HR roles that I've had. You have to earn that. And I think that's why I think I was always very intentional on that engagement and alignment with that business leader. Look, I'm sure there's some listeners who work for a business leader or a CEO and they haven't found that alignment yet. Sometimes it's just not fully going to be there. But find the best level of alignment you can. And if you need to steal my example of number one and number two, just to stroke that person's ego or to be clear about the role you want to play, I'd encourage people to do that. But I think you do earn it over time. And I just would say that the best CHROs do it, the best HR professionals do it at different levels across their companies. That to me is the good stuff. Like I said, I can always lean back on policy and stuff, but that's boring. I'll tease Rick, who won't listen to this podcast unless I make him do it, which I might. But he always would say to me, look, there's two things you want. So I told him the two things. He told me the two things. My two things were deliver the talent and create the culture. And what he said was very funny, because what he said is, I want you to deliver the talent, create the culture. And then he's a nice guy. He would say, now, I know you do all that other stuff and do that well, but I only really care about your number one and number two, talent and culture. So we've had a very kind of fun back and forth relationship, but we've also had clarity. One way to him and one way to me about what it is we want from each other. And I think that's the best.
Absolutely. I think it's great that he was clear with you of what he wants, the talent, the culture piece. And like you said, you know, we have to execute. I call it execution plus. Execute, you don't get to the plus. And everyone's got to deliver. That's it. But you want the plus, right? We all want to be the Apple plus, the Disney plus, the execution plus. And sometimes you got to do what the business needs. And if you're in a situation where your business needs to get payroll fixed and these, you know, different legal issues are maybe resolved or compliance issues are out of the way, that's where you start to build the credibility to get to the plus. You know, if you go and try to do the sexy stuff on top, you're in trouble.
I completely agree. And that is interesting, right? Because some people forget that too. It's an interesting challenge for HR people. We have to be good at the core and then you want to elevate to the plus. But some people just stay in the core And some people only want the plus. You've got to be able to do both. I think that's well said by you.
Thanks. And I think, well, the one thing that's also interesting, I'd love your take on this. And when you think about finance, everyone knows pretty much what a great CFO should look like because we have GAAP accounting rules. We understand there's rules of the road are very clear. HR is really different because the HR leader, who you are as a person, how you lead, how you approach talent and culture, how you work with your senior executives, absolutely is different because of the person. And there's some playbooks we try to follow, but it is not cookie cutter. And that's what makes HR so unique, so difficult, and probably why we can have a podcast and talk to all the different HR leaders and hear the different perspectives, because everyone's trying to figure out their styles. I do have a point here. You can talk about the finance if you want. But really, Tim, you know, you've talked about just kind of HR leaders need to know it, decide what they believe in and have some core beliefs like you've talked about today. Maybe just talk a little bit more about what that means to you and you, how you think about the differences of what a great CHRO is versus maybe other functions that are a little bit more structured.
Yeah, it's a great question because I do think, I actually absolutely do believe that. You have to have an opinion about what it is that you believe in about the profession. And you're right, finance has a benefit. We have to publish the 10Q. We're working on different levels of reporting, or we roll up the numbers. There's clarity at the executive staff meeting, like what's the CFO's role? I just think we have to understand that ours is different, but not less important. And I think it's an equally important role in the best companies that CFO, CHRO, or whatever division you're in, whatever it might be, you need to think about, might be a good question for some of the listeners. If you don't find yourself at a level of balance with your finance colleague, what would it take for you to get there? And so think about how you can make a bigger impact. I think it is challenging though. There's lots of stuff that happens because we're in the people business. And it comes at you separately and we have to find ourselves responding to it. You know, it comes to mind, quiet quitting was a big thing a few years ago, right? Big into the papers. And everyone's like wringing their hands over quiet quitting. And I wasn't. I'm just telling you, I wasn't. Because to me, quiet quitting was just another name for engagement. We measure engagement in our employee surveys. We know the level of engagement we have in our company. We pound on that every day. Again, go back to our ways we work, go back to the hard wiring. We are determined and adamant to create high levels of engagement and inclusion. So when the noise starts coming, quiet quitting, and you're like, okay, consultants, thanks for selling more into our companies. You're distracting some HR people. Now we're all having to respond. You have to believe in what you believe in. And I believe that quiet quitting was another name for engagement. And we knew what our numbers were. We spent zero time talking about quiet quitting. And that helped us because we didn't get distracted. Another example, this is going to sound funny because I know there's people who are not going to agree with me, but let's just use an example of believe in what you believe in. So I am not a believer in this whole idea of generations in the workforce. And there are people who have written books and there are lots of consultants who have done lots of seminars and people have spent lots of time thinking about planning for and managing these different generations in the workforce. I might be wrong. You always want to start by accepting that. But my belief is that these broad brushes about people based on their age are not helpful. It doesn't help me be better at my job, doesn't help us be better about our workforce, doesn't help us do talent management better. And as HR professionals, we've spent our whole career helping people not make broad brushes and assumptions around a race, a gender, a whatever. But we've allowed it to exist by some around people based on age. So my team will tell you, I hope they will smile as they tell you, JP, but they'll tell you, they're effectively banned from bringing in generations in the workforce talk into what we do or how we do it. It's just an example of, now, others may disagree. I fully accept that. They may spend time on it and love the benefit they get from it. You just have to believe what you believe. And I believe that we've got more higher value HR work that we could do when we differentiate and know people at the individual level. That's how I want to be known, at the individual level. I'll tell you, in my example, I've got a twin brother. Lucky for him, we're not identical. And I will tell you that's my bad joke. Sorry, insert a little joke into our podcast. But I'll tell you that we're very different in a good way. And I love my brother. But you would never make the same broad brush assumptions about even two people who are brothers and the same age when they're so different. So I don't find that interesting or important. And that's just one example that I went on. I got on my soapbox there, but about generations in the workforce.
Yeah, no, I think it's interesting. I appreciate the perspective. And I think, you know, there's a lot of bright, shiny objects in our field that we have almost consider them landmines. I mean, they're basically like mine, poison for our minds that distract from the bigger picture of when you really think about what do people want from a manager or a company? What do they want from a job? Autonomy, mastery, They want to be respected. They want to get along. They want to get ahead. There's a lot of universal beliefs that the generation is not very helpful for. Now, I did have Jean Twenge on, who's a San Diego State professor. She's written the book, Generation Me. She's actually one of the only people who've done generational studies over time. So it's much more valid. You can check that podcast out, Tim, and what some of the facts on that. But there are very little differences. Most of it's life stage. And the biggest thing she talked about is technology. And technology has made a huge difference. And that is the game changer that's caused some things around mental health that has shifted. But what is not different are the factors of like how we want to be led, understood, respected. All those things are still really the same. So I agree with you.
But your point, I think life stage is correct. There are things there that are unique to life stages, and really good companies are able to support you wherever you are in that life stage. So that's certainly one of our aspirations. And just I'll say to the listeners too, one of my examples, and I'm going to try and live it, is challenge your assumptions, be willing to be challenged. I will listen to that podcast, JP, and I'm sure I'll learn something from it.
Yeah, she's good. And the reason why she's on there is because she is the only one of the only researchers who's done generational research over time the same. So she can really tell you what the generational differences are. Her books are intense. Her latest book is like reading a book for college textbook. So I couldn't get through the whole thing, but it was great. So she's awesome. All right, Tim, two more questions for you because I want to get to this just because you have taken on a new role that I think is really important. And I want to just talk a little bit more about that role and give you an opportunity to talk about the organization. You're actually going to be the chair for the HR Policy Association. And I'd love if for our listeners who are not as familiar, if you can just talk a little bit more about the organization and why it's significant and why you decided to take on a leadership role at this time.
Yeah, it's humbling to take on that role. I'm excited about becoming the chair of HRPA. The HR Policy Association is an association of about 400 large companies, mostly represented by their CHROs. And so I think of it as the voice of the CHRO and really the gathering place for CHROs. I might be accused of some bias, but I'll tell you, if you could only pick one external HR organization to be a part of and to belong to me, this is the answer. And they lead on policy, and policy is really important for what it is that we do, whether it's regulatory or it's legislative. HR policy, it's in the name, has a strength there, and also around things like labor, which is critically important for many of our employers, but also just for those who care about general employee relations and things like that. I'd also say the Center on Executive Compensation is a really well-known center. It's, to me, the one place to learn and to grow and to, again, do the role that I'm doing now. You cannot be average in executive compensation. You want to be good in executive compensation. And the Center on Executive Compensation is a best practice center. And so HRPA is at a great place as I come into this role. We're doing a little bit of work around strategy. You could guess based on my earlier comments on this podcast, I think strategy is critically important. I do think we'll look at trying to enhance some areas of opportunity to even kind of expand our base, if you will, to become even more attractive to member companies, to provide more value to the member companies. But again, probably the most important thing for me is that this is the place for CHROs to engage in a very strong peer network. And that's one of the strengths of the HRPA is when I go to those meetings, I'm around people who do what I do at other companies. I learn from them. I benefit from relationships. It just helps us elevate the profession, but also help us as peers solve some of the issues that come our way, separate the noise, those flashing lights you talked about, or bright shiny lights that you talked about that sometimes distract us. But I'm really proud to take on this role, and I'm excited about our future of that association.
Yeah, I think it's great. And I'm glad we could talk a little bit about what HRPA does. I also think it's just really critical. So here's a PSA on HR leaders expanding your network, right?
Yeah.
Pick an organization, start to have much more of an expansion of network. And I've, in this last 2 years, and really even the last 6 months, I've just realized how important that is and how a lot of HR leaders, because we are more insular, we're focused on our companies, we are so focused on helping our leaders and our organization to win, we don't spend enough time externally talking to others and building networks. I just encourage people to find an organization that works for them and build that network, because somebody, another organization, to your point, Tim, has had the problem and solved it of what you've had, right? They've actually been there, done it, can tell you what to do. You have to go back and apply it, but we can learn a lot from each other. And that's also what separates HR from other functions, where we are much more happy to share what we're working on. And it's not typically giving away the secret sauce of the company. And that's great.
I completely agree, JP. You couldn't have said it better. I think that external network's critical. So you've got to give yourself permission. And in some companies, it's lock it in. We're in, like, you know, I think the status of your business, the status of your company is critical. And if it's, you know, we're on fire and I'm here every day locked in, I get it. But give yourself permission for when that fire gets more moderated or gets extinguished to give yourself the grace of expanding your network. Not only like get to know others, but also I'd say get to be known. People need to know who you are. And I think that's a really positive thing. And you mentioned Angela Lane earlier. I knew Angela Lane before I even thought of her as a candidate for AbbVie. In fact, I respect her so much, I probably wouldn't have thought that I should call her about my head of talent job. But if you're out there and you're networked and you're engaged, you know what good looks like. You're also getting a chance to calibrate yourself against that standard. You're building that peer network that we talked about. I love the learning from others. And I also say some of the learning says, yeah, I don't think that's going to work at my company. That's okay. That's valuable. I need, again, what do I believe in? What do I know? That's going to make you a better professional for sure.
Yeah, I think learning and being a deliberate learner is so critical for all of us to continue that journey and never stop, especially in the age of AI, right? We've got a lot coming our way. And so if you think you haven't figured out, you're probably in trouble.
That's probably right.
Tim, last question for you that asks all my guests, of course, knew it was coming. What is one word or phrase that you believe will define the future of HR over the next 5 to 10 years?
I wish I had the elegant phrase, but I think a couple things top of mind for sure. Stay on strategy. Don't lose strategy. Think about people leadership, strength and quality of people leadership, and then talent. To me, those are the three critical things. Name the role, name the company, name the maturity curve and life cycle. It goes back to strategy, people leadership, and talent. And I think we're going to have more technology come our way. We're going to have more capability for more effective and efficient elements of technology through AI, as you mentioned, and other things. And that's okay. And that's great. Let's embrace that. But it's still going to come back to, do I have a strategy? Do I have enough? Do I have my unfair share of the best people leadership? And do I have enough talent to win the race? It really comes back to that. We should not lose focus on that as we go forward.
Tim, this was an incredible conversation, super insightful, and I think just so many pragmatic ideas for CHROs and HR leaders. So thank you for being on the podcast.
It's my pleasure, JP. It's been nice to join you.
Thank you so much for listening to this episode of Future of HR Podcast. Thanks again to Tim for sharing his insights on how to build a great place to work that drives business success. As always, you can go to futureofhr.com to view all of our past episodes and learn more about our mission to inspire the next generation of HR leaders. And if you enjoyed this episode of Future of HR, be sure to subscribe or share our podcast with at least one other person. This really helps us to grow the podcast and helps with our mission of inspiring the next generation of HR leaders. We'll be back next week with two guests, Melissa Huntley, who is the Global Head of Talent Management at Visa, and Aaron Monroe, Managing Director, Global Head of Agile Center for Enablement at JPMorgan Chase. Melissa and Aaron are going to go deep on OKRs, which stands for Objectives and Key Results. It's a collaborative goal-setting methodology used by teams and individuals to create challenging and ambitious goals that measure results. Many forward-looking Fortune 500 companies and tech startups have been using OKRs. So if you've ever been curious about OKRs or are thinking about trying a new approach to goal setting, this conversation is for you. Thanks again for listening to the Future of HR and being part of our community.